Good day, and welcome to the SBA Taking Effect call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ianse Mesker. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone for joining us today on this press call to talk about Texas's six-week abortion ban, which, as you all know, has officially gone into effect absent a ruling from the Supreme Court. Today you'll be hearing from some of our litigators and plaintiffs in the case challenging the law, as well as some of those who will be impacted on the ground. As you can imagine, it's an incredibly busy day for folks, so I really appreciate them all making the time. So today you'll be hearing from Mark Heron, who is the lead attorney on the case and senior counsel with the Center for Reproductive Rights, Amy Hackstrom-Miller, who is the CEO of Whole Woman's Health and Whole Woman's Health Alliance, Vanessa Rodriguez, who is a call center manager at Planned Parenthood Greater Texas, Anna Rupani, who is the co-executive director of Fund Texas Choice, Adriana Pinon, who is the senior staff attorney at ACLU of Texas, and Paige Alexandria, who is a storyteller with We Testify, which is an organization committed to uplifting and celebrating the voices of people who've had abortion. We're going to get started with the call now, and I will turn it over to Mark at the Center for Reproductive Rights. Thank you, Mark.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining. This morning is a somber morning for Texans. As you know, SB 8, the six-week ban on abortion, took effect at midnight last night, and as of now, most abortion is banned in Texas. How did we get here? I'd like to take a step back and sort of explain the process of exactly how we got here. On behalf of a large coalition of plaintiffs, we sued back in June in federal district court in Austin, a coalition of Center for Reproductive Rights, Planned Parenthood, Lawyering Project, ACLU, ACLU of Texas, Morrison & Foerster, and Austin attorney Christy Hubert. On behalf of plaintiffs, a coalition of plaintiffs led by Whole Woman's Health and other Texas abortion providers, Texas abortion funds and patient support networks, physicians, health center staff, and clergy members. We filed the suit to challenge Texas's six-week abortion ban, which I'll give us an overview of in just a moment. We were poised, throughout the lawsuit, the defendants had argued that the case should be dismissed. And last Wednesday, the district court rejected all of those arguments, held that the plaintiffs have standing, held that we had sued the proper parties, and that our case should go forward. And in fact, our case was poised to have a preliminary injunction hearing on Monday in advance of SB 8 taking effect. The defendants in the case were able to appeal and get the case basically transferred to the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit over the weekend issued an order staying the case in the district court and canceling the preliminary injunction hearing that was scheduled on Monday. We filed emergency motions in the Fifth Circuit over the weekend, asking the Fifth Circuit to lift the stays, asking the Fifth Circuit to transfer the case back to the district court, or at a minimum, treat this case with the urgency that it demands. And if the Fifth Circuit wasn't going to transfer the case back, at least decide the appeal very quickly so that we could get a resolution and get back in the district court to get this law enjoined. The Fifth Circuit refused all of our requests, and that forced us on Monday to file an emergency application with the Supreme Court, asking the Supreme Court to step in and enjoin SB 8. We made the urgency, we explained to the court the urgency, and the court is well aware that the law was taking effect as of midnight. Currently, the Supreme Court has not acted. We could still get a decision later today or in the coming days. Just to give you a background or remind everyone of exactly why this law is so pernicious and why it must be enjoined. SBA bans abortions beginning at 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is a point in pregnancy when many patients do not even know that they're pregnant. Approximately 85 to 90% of abortions in Texas occur after 6 weeks of pregnancy. So this is a near total ban on abortions across the state. In addition, this law creates a vigilante scheme where it allows private parties, private citizens to take over, to hijack the Texas state court system and sue abortion providers, physicians, abortion funds, patient support networks. Anyone who supports a patient in getting an abortion is at risk and is with this pernicious law. We're still hoping to hear from the court today, and we will keep fighting. We are obviously not giving up. We will keep fighting. So now we want you to hear from some of the plaintiffs, from one of the plaintiffs, about exactly what's happening on the ground in Texas this morning. So I'm going to hand it over to Amy Hackstrom Miller, who is the president and CEO of Whole Woman's Health, which operates 4 clinics in Texas.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning, everybody. As Mark said, my name is Amy Hackstrom Miller. I am the president and CEO of Whole Woman's Health and Whole Woman's Health Alliance. We are an independent abortion provider operating 4 clinics in the state of Texas, in Fort Worth and McKinney, Austin and McAllen. And we are the lead plaintiff challenging this callous, atrocious abortion ban. You may recall, not so long ago, Whole Woman's Health was also the lead plaintiff in Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt, and a similar kind of situation where we had to challenge multiple restrictions on access to abortion in the state of Texas that were under the umbrella law, HB2. And we had a significant victory in the Supreme Court in 2016. Unfortunately, part of being an abortion provider in this country, in the South and the Midwest, oftentimes requires litigation, requires this level of advocacy and this level of commitment in order to keep our clinics open, in order to be available to serve the people who need access to safe abortion in our communities. This morning, I woke up feeling deep sadness. I'm worried. I'm numb. I'd like to take a moment to share with you all what the final hours of legal abortion care looked like in Texas last night. Whole Woman's Health had staff and physicians providing abortions in Texas until 11:56 is the time we finished our last abortion in Fort Worth last night. Our waiting rooms were filled with patients and their loved ones in all 4 of our clinics yesterday. We had a physician who has worked with us for decades in tears as he tried to complete the abortions for all the folks who were waiting in our Fort Worth waiting room. Marva Sadler, who is a plaintiff in this case and who is our director of clinical services in Texas, was on site also in Fort Worth working with our physician to see every single patient. She called me at 10 p.m. with 27 patients left in the waiting room. And both she and the doctor were crying and just asking me, what can we do? How can we be sure we can see all these folks? Keep in mind, the anti-abortion protesters were outside this entire time from the moment we opened at 8 until we closed at midnight. And once it got dark, they got giant shining lights and shined the lights on the parking lot. We were under surveillance. This is not abstract. This is real for our team. The protesters called the police twice and the fire department once yesterday in Fort Worth, all in their attempt to try to say there were too many patients, to try to find some law we were breaking. And, of course, we weren't breaking any laws. We were responding to our community and trying to care for the people that deserve access to safe abortion care, the same people who deserve that access today as did yesterday. We were able to see all of those patients, and I want to make it clear that today, Whole Woman's Health and Whole Woman's Health Alliance clinics are providing care in accordance with the law. We are fully compliant with SB 8, and we are unwavering in believing that Texans deserve abortion care in their own communities. We love our patients. We love our partners and our supporters. Our work is not over. We will continue fighting and doing everything we can for Texans' rights to safe abortion and compassionate care. But this can't only be up to abortion clinic folks to fix. This is a much larger problem. This law opens up a bounty system, a vigilante kind of system that can call into question anyone who supports access to abortion. All of us know somebody and love somebody who has had an abortion in our lifetime or might need an abortion at some point. And I ask you, is this the kind of environment we want somebody we love to go through in order to access safe abortion care? The fact is, the majority of Texans didn't want this bill. Texans believe in community, in friendship, in empathy, and above all, in freedom. This ban does not represent the values of Texans. I don't want to hear people say things like Texas should secede or over there in Texas everything is extreme. Texans is full of people just like people all over this country. Parents who are trying to make difficult decisions for their families in the context of this pandemic. People who are juggling work and school and many concerns, and they should have access to safe abortion as they make these decisions for their families. This ban prevents doctors from using their best medical judgment when it comes to caring for patients, and instead it turns Texans' care over to these self-appointed vigilantes and whoever might hold the power at any moment. Anti-abortion politicians can no longer hide behind the guise of health or safety. This is an all-out abortion ban, plain and simple. It's cruel, it's extreme, and it's happening on our watch. SB 8 robs people of their ability to make decisions about their health and their future. We've been here before. In 2013, HB 2 closed clinics. In April of 2020, Governor Abbott's executive order closed clinics. Both times, we fought and we won, and we were able to reopen and serve the people of Texas. I want to just point out that, of course, at this moment, we are now in an unprecedented and complicated situation. But we are sure of one thing. Our values, our commitment, and what we stand for hasn't changed. Whole Woman's Health believes abortion is a moral and social good. And we know access to safe abortion makes our communities safer and more healthy. Texans deserve better than this. Thank you. It's my delight to introduce Vanessa Rodriguez, the call center manager for Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate your words and all the work that you're doing at Whole Women to support the communities in Texas. Good morning, everybody. My name is Vanessa Rodriguez. I am the Contact Center Senior Manager at Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas. I'm based here in Dallas. I'm going to focus a little bit on how SB 8 is going to focus on impact with the community and patients. I've been with the organization for 14 years. And as the contact center manager, I have a team that handles all the incoming inquiries for appointments at our 24 health centers. Not all of those offer abortion care. We do both family planning and abortion services. We help with booking, rescheduling, telemedicine appointments for family planning, everything you can think of that we can help with patients. Today is a very difficult day for all of us. We're on the front lines of guiding Texas through this extreme restrictions that are imposed on them as they seek abortion care under Senate Bill 8. It's important to point out that Texans already face some of the most challenging barriers to abortion in the country. It's often my team that has to explain to people what hoops they have to jump through, no matter how desperate, confused, or afraid they might be. And this is all prior to SB 8 going into effect. We've had to do this now with the current restrictions and barriers against care for abortion care in Texas. My team also hears patients' concerns about the additional cost of travel, both within Texas and outside of Texas. Taking time off of work so they can make multiple appointments, finding childcare in order for them to attend to multiple appointments, and how that impacts people's lives because they have to take off work and find time to make these trips to the doctor in person and spend several hours in the health centers getting the care that they need. We know how much harder all of this becomes when the patient is lower income, undocumented, or faces other challenges to seeking health care. particularly when that health care isn't available in their community. You know, many Texans right now within the state have to travel hundreds of miles to get to their closest abortion facility. Under Senate Bill 8 restrictions, many people in Texas will not be able to find a way to travel from their rural communities, take the time off of work, make childcare plans to allow them to leave the state. This is even if they can access additional funding resources for travel, cost of the procedure, lodging, food, and again, childcare. As they're traveling outside of the state, that impacts their families and their lives. For many people, it will simply be insurmountable. And we have to acknowledge that you're taking that choice away from people with under SBA guidelines. We don't have to guess how this is going to impact the lives of our patients. Like Amy mentioned before me, when the COVID-19 pandemic began in 2020, last year in Texas, Governor Abbott banned abortion as a non-essential medical procedure, citing the conservation of medical resources as the justification there. During that time, patients were already facing the fear and complications of the pandemic. They also had to now face an additional totally unnecessary crisis on access to abortion care. That time, my team was in a difficult position of managing reactions and patient schedules. We had to tell people that we can't see you because of the governor's ruling. And it's heartbreaking to tell someone that they don't have a choice. Many people were angry, and some people were scared and crying. Some people are in shock and don't know what to do or say. A lot of them are processing that information. And this is the same reactions that we're getting from people right now. We were having these conversations with people as of yesterday on what's their best route to access care. Last year and now, we do our best to try to help people figure out what their next steps might be. We help to find appointments in Colorado, Oklahoma, Kansas, New Mexico. Last year, I remember one patient asked for a referral in Missouri so that she could stay with her family while she got abortion care since she couldn't obtain it in Texas. So this summer, not long after opening a health center and restoring abortion services in Lubbock for the first time in many years, the city of Lubbock also banned abortion services within the city limits using a controversial city ordinance that's similar to SB 8. You know, this summer, access to care for Lubbock came and went as we worked through city ordinances and laws that ban services within that area. It's important to remember that laws don't stop people from getting pregnant, needing birth control, needing testing or treatment for STIs, or developing cervical cancer. That's what makes health care essential. People don't often understand why we cannot serve them. They are not interested in or involved with politics. These people, they're individuals, and their focus is on their education, their families, their work, and daily lives. They don't expect their zip code to determine whether they can access health care, and they certainly don't expect their neighbors to be empowered to investigate their private medical decisions. It is simply gut-wrenching to be in this situation here with SB 8 or Senate Bill 8. The abortion ban last year lasted for about a month, and it was devastating to our communities in Texas and to our staff on all levels. And like I said earlier, we're getting patients who are scared, confused, angry. They're asking questions about, is abortion still legal? Am I too far along to have an abortion in Texas? What can I do? People are scared, and they look to us for answers. My heart is broken that we have to tell them that Texas politicians are taking away their right to make the decisions that they feel are right, the right ones for themselves and their families. But we are dedicated to helping people no matter what. We have prepared additional resources and support for patients in anticipation of this devastating ban going into effect today. We will continue to support and educate our communities and each other along the way. Planned Parenthood started here in Texas more than 85 years ago to promote healthy communities, and we are not going to stop now. We will comply with Texas's extreme new mandates while we continue to challenge it in the courts, and we will provide care to our patients just as we always have. So with that, I'm going to wrap up and pass it on to Anna Rupani, the co-executive director of Fund Texas Choice. Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you, Vanessa, and thank you and your team for all the hard work that you've been doing before SBA and even after. Again, my name is Anna Rupani, and I'm the co-executive director at Fund Texas Choice, and we are also a plaintiff in this legal challenge. Fund Texas Choice is a statewide nonprofit that is dedicated to helping Texans equitably access abortion through confidential and comprehensive travel services and practical support. We pay for transportation, lodging, food, ride shares, sanitary products, and sometimes offer child care stipends for Texans seeking abortion care. FTC is no stranger to restrictive laws harming abortion access. It was founded in response to House Bill 2, a Texas statute that shuttered over half of the state's abortion clinics, imposing long wait times on abortion patients and forcing them to travel long distances for care. As Amy mentioned earlier, although this law was overturned, the impact of that law was felt by Texans. The same will be true starting today because of SB 8. FTC was formed because we know that if folks can't afford their abortion, they can't afford to get to their abortion, which is why we are here and where we step in. FTC is a practical support fund that works in collaboration with other practical support and abortion funds in and around Texas. Practical support means helping people access abortions through travel, housing, and other basic logistical and emotional needs so that folks can go to and from their appointments safely. Abortion funds are a network of local autonomous organizations that are funding abortions and providing emotional support to those accessing abortions. Collectively, these organizations use their grassroots work to build power by working with each other to support pregnant individuals navigate barriers together, because we believe a holistic approach is the best way to make sure folks get access to the care they deserve. The ISEA Center, Frontera Fund, Fund Texas Choice, James Due Process, Lilith Fund, and T-Fund are abortion funds and practical support networks in Texas that provide a broad range of services to pregnant people seeking abortion care throughout Texas, including funding emotional support and abortion doula services, travel accommodation, child care, legal representation, and judicial bypass support for young people. We are all a part of the challenge to SB8, and we are waiting for the Supreme Court to act. Nearly all our callers will now need to travel out of state. Out-of-state travel is generally more expensive than in-state travel because it typically takes more time and sometimes involves costlier destinations than Texas. Scott Mocker Institute recently estimated that the average one-way driving distance to an abortion clinic would increase from 12 miles to 248 miles, which is 20 times more the distance. Now imagine needing to book a flight or a bus to another state, of a hotel to stay in, versus doing a quick drive down to a clinic, and now doing all of this during COVID. Some of our clients would be unable to leave Texas for abortion care because of the amount of time that it would require them to be away from their home and the difficulty in maintaining confidentiality in abusive situations. Both groups of clients would be forced to carry to term or take matters into their own hands. These are the very outcomes that FTC managed when Texas sharply curtailed abortion at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic last year. COVID-19 has only added to obstacles surrounding abortion access and pushed Texans to their financial limits. Many are unemployed, have become full-time caregivers to children or elders, and are facing economic insecurity as a result of the pandemic. This has led to an increase in practical support needs like meals, lodging, travel, and childcare when traveling to seek an abortion. Because Texas is trying to evade judicial scrutiny and accountability in the courts by encouraging private citizens to do their dirty work for them, lawsuits filed pursuant to SB 8 against FTC and other abortion and practical support funds could hobble our ability to serve our clients. More and more, as state leaders continue to fail us, we continue to stand by Texans seeking access to their personal reproductive choices and care in accordance with the law. We will continue to fight for our clients because Texans are resilient and we know they deserve equitable and safe access to care. I delight to pass it on to Adriana Piñon, Senior Staff Attorney at ACLU.
Thank you. Today marks a dark moment in Texas history. As SB 8 goes into effect, and as our constitutional right to an abortion is now virtually eliminated, Texans are bracing themselves for what this means. Already, the serious threat of harassing vigilante lawsuits against abortion providers has stopped nearly all abortion in the state. You've heard 85 to 90% of abortions in Texas take place after 6 weeks. Now these can no longer occur. As a woman who was born and reared in Texas, I am not only saddened, I am outraged. Now, for Texans everywhere in the state who need an abortion now or in the future, they may not be able to ever exercise their right to have one. People struggling to make ends meet, including many in our Black and Brown communities, will not be able to travel to another state and will be forced to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term, even in cases of rape or incest. And family members who try to support loved ones will also pay the price by risking lawsuits against them if they pay for their abortion of a loved one or if they give their loved one a ride to the clinic. In a state that suffers one of the highest maternal mortality rates, particularly for Black women, the solution is not stripping away constitutionally protected care. Though Texas lawmakers may try as they may with every tool to claw back our fundamental civil rights and liberties, from voting to abortion care, we know that Texans deserve much better than that. We deserve the right to make decisions about our lives, health, families, and futures. Our fight will not end today, and we are hopeful that the Supreme Court will still act to stop this catastrophic violation of our constitutional right to an abortion. We'll keep doing everything in our power to stop this law and protect Texans' fundamental rights. In the meantime, we are united with all Texans on this day and always. And I'm going to turn it over next to Paige at We Testify.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for joining us today. My name is Paige Alexandria, and I'm a storyteller with We Testify. When I needed an abortion in Texas in 2016, I found out I was 7 weeks pregnant at my state-mandated ultrasound. But after complying with the mandatory counseling and 24-hour waiting period, I wasn't able to have an abortion until I was over 9 weeks pregnant due to limited appointments at the few clinics that still existed after the passage of HB 2, another cruel and restrictive bill that closed down over half of Texas's abortion providers and left many Texans 300 miles or more from their nearest abortion clinic. Had SB 8 been in effect back then, I wouldn't have been able to have an abortion at all. And even though I found out I was pregnant early on, state restrictions delayed my abortion care by more than 2 weeks, increasing the cost I had to pay as each day passed. Thankfully, the Lilith Fund, an abortion fund that serves Central and Southern Texas, was able to help me offset those increased costs. Without their assistance, the delay in my abortion care would have either been much longer or I'd have been forced to continue a pregnancy I wasn't ready for. Now, SBA puts a target on me as someone who's made a career out of helping others access care. Because SBA can be enforced by anyone, even a complete stranger, the law puts a direct target on the backs of providers, abortion funds, and advocates like me who are already at risk of anti-abortion violence, increasing our chance of surveillance from anti-choice extremists who have already started strategizing ways to enforce this ban. To consider the support of abortion support networks as criminal or unlawful is a direct threat to our fundamental rights and our ability to access the basic health care we need, and to the people of Texas who politicians should be serving. When our government continues to deny our right to bodily autonomy, providers, abortion funds, and other advocates have always fought back to ensure abortion is not just legal, but accessible for all, regardless of our zip code or how much money we have. And I want Texans to know that you can continue to depend on these organizations now. Things may feel really scary and uncertain, but one thing that remains constant is how committed our Texas providers, funds, and advocates in our community are to reproductive justice. Whether we choose parenting, adoption, or abortion, we deserve the resources and ability to plan our family how and when we want, free from interference, now and always. Thank you all for listening, and I'll pass it back to Iyanpe with Planned Parenthood.
Thank you, Paige, and thank you, everybody, for your remarks. This is a really difficult day, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share what's going on the ground with reporters on this call. We are now going to start the Q&A. We do have a lot of folks on the call, so we're not going to get to everybody's questions, and we'll do our best to follow up. I also ask that folks indicate who they want to talk to expedite things when they ask their question. I'll let Shelby, our operator, let us know how to join the queue.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a few moments to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question with Michelle Goldberg with the New York Times.
Hi, thank you so much. This is a question from Mark, and I'm sorry, this question is two parts. I first wanted to know how this law will apply to somebody who helps a woman with a self-managed abortion, and I also wanted to know what the legal path is now.
Sure. So the prohibition, the underlying prohibition on abortion, applies to physicians providing abortion. So the law says, I can quote from the law here, a physician may not knowingly perform or induce an abortion upon detection of, detectable cardiac activity. So I think the best reading of the law is that it would not apply to self-managed abortions or to those who assist with self-managed abortions. One of the pernicious parts of this law, however, is, if this were enforced by state officials, you could have some reliability that those officials would enforce the law in the same way and would read the law in a reasonable way. But because this law is enforced by literally any person who can initiate an enforcement action in any state court across the state, there's no telling whether someone would still try to sue someone. And so, you could imagine the possibility that someone assists with a self-managed abortion in one part of the state and someone in another part of the state sues them and forces them into court in that part of the state. That's just part of the whole pernicious part of the law. But the best read of the law is that it does not actually prohibit self-managed abortion. As for our next steps forward, we're waiting for the Supreme Court to act. We're still hoping to hear from them later today or in the coming days, and we're evaluating our next steps.
We'll take our next question from Sarah McCammon with NPR.
Hi. I also have a question about the legal process. I know that aside from the Supreme Court trajectory, there's also the, the Sixth Circuit situation, and it's a little complicated, but I wonder if you could sort of bring us up to speed on where that stands. And my understanding is that the Fifth Circuit still needs to weigh in on some jurisdictional issues, or those still need to be litigated. What's left to do there, and how might what happens at the Supreme Court, what bearing might that have on what happens at the Fifth Circuit?
Sure. So the defendants have appealed to the Fifth Circuit, and so right now the case is basically with the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit has issued a stay preventing the district court from acting. We We asked the Fifth Circuit to expedite the appeal so that we could get a decision quickly. They refused that request. We asked them, okay, if you're not going to send the case back to the district court, you have the power to issue an injunction, so we would like you to issue an injunction pending the appeal, please, and they refused to do that. In terms of the next steps, there is a pending, we have moved to dismiss the appeal from the private individual who we've named as a defendant, and because he clearly has no right to appeal right now and should not, the case as to him definitely should not be in the Fifth Circuit right now. We have not heard yet from the Fifth Circuit what it's going to do with respect to that request. But even if that, even if the Fifth Circuit grants our request there, it only would get that one private individual back in the district court, and it wouldn't provide the full relief that abortion providers and patient supporters need to ensure that the law would be blocked.
We'll take our next question from Eleanor Dearman with Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Mine is two parts. I wanted to first clarify with Amy, the clinic where you said there were protesters outside and the strobe lights shining on, I wanted to clarify that that was y'all's Fort Worth facility. And then also I wanted to touch base with you on what particularly your North Texas facilities, what were y'all doing to prepare for the implementation of this law? And now that it's officially gone into effect, where does that leave y'all in terms of the day-to-day provider and services offered?
Sure. Thank you, Eleanor. So the clinic I was describing is Whole Woman's Health of Fort Worth. It wasn't strobe lights, but it was lights that the protesters brought out to assist their surveillance of the parking lot and surveillance of the staff as we tried to complete as many abortions as possible before midnight. Whole Woman's Health operates four clinics in the state of Texas, Fort Worth, McKinney, Austin, and McAllen. All of our clinics are open today and in full compliance, unfortunately, with SB 8, which means that today we're offering ultrasounds, and if folks' pregnancies do not have cardiac activity, we're able to proceed with consenting them and preparing them for an abortion in Texas, which, as you know, there's a two-visit state-mandated requirement, and the physicians need to see the patients today and tomorrow in order for them to complete their abortion. So anyone eligible, which means anybody who has a pregnancy without embryonic or fetal cardiac activity, will be able to be seen in Texas, and other folks who may be ineligible as of today to have an abortion in Texas will receive the support and guidance from our clinic staff. Some folks may choose to go outside the state. Some folks may choose to wait and see, which has been our experience with past bans, that many people can't travel outside of the state. The majority of our patients are parents and have multiple jobs and are navigating challenging parenting decisions in the context of the pandemic, like all of us are. So many people may wait and see to see if we are able to get injunctive relief and be able to reopen. And some folks may turn to self-managed abortion, as we were talking about. So we've had a lot of compliance work. I'm sure every abortion provider in this state and all the abortion funds have been looking at protocols and our policies and the way we approach conversations with patients and the information we can give them and how we document in our charts to prove that all the abortions we do provide are in compliance with SB 8. Phone calls with physicians, trainings with staff. We've changed the way we answer the phone. We've changed notifications on our website to let folks know what the law is and that we're compliant. The compliance has been onerous and has been lengthy, and our teams are on site today.
We'll take our next question from Alexandra Spokos with ABC News.
Hi, thank you. Similar question along the same lines, also for Vanessa with Planned Parenthood. Is
are Planned Parenthood clinics still providing abortion care today in accordance with the law?
So this is Ianthe from Planned Parenthood. Vanessa, unfortunately, I had to hop off the call. But I can say yes, they are providing abortions at our clinics in compliance with the law right now. But Vanessa has to get back to working on helping patients over there. We can follow up with any other questions, though.
We'll take our next question from Stephanie Cordova with Univision.
Hola, buenos días. Quisiera saber si alguien podría darnos alguna declaración en español en cuanto a esta nueva ley.
Sí, en cómo funciona o qué específicamente necesita saber.
Sí, básicamente también. Lo que implica la ley, por favor, y cómo esto va a afectar al Estado.
Sí, cómo no. Esta ley prohíbe el aborto a partir de más o menos 6 semanas. Aquí en Texas, 85 a 90% de los abortos que ocurren en el estado ocurren ya después de las 6 semanas. Esto es decir que esta ley va casi eliminar el derecho constitucional al aborto para todos los texanos. También abre la puerta a la corte porque permite que personas que proveen un aborto en contra de la ley o personas que lo ayudan pueden ser demandados en nuestras cortes de Texas por lo mínimo por $10,000 si tienen éxito en su caso. Esto impacta no solo el acceso a este servicio médico protegido constitucionalmente, es necesario, y la cual es necesario, pero también a todo el red que tenemos en este estado de apoyo para las personas que están contemplando un aborto. Esta ley es una grave, grave violación de derechos constitucionales. Y esperamos que la Corte Suprema actúe para parar estas violaciones.
We'll take our next question from Ruth Marcus with the Washington Post.
Yes, hi. Thanks for doing this. And I may have missed the top of the call, so I may have missed an answer to this. But it sounds, and if I don't have it incorrect, as if some of the clinics are, the Planned Parenthood clinics are continuing to provide abortion services, but the Whole Women's Health clinics aren't. And my question is, why? And in other words, this is a law that obviously is unconstitutional. Why not go ahead and provide the services? And if someone is sued under the provisions of SBA, challenge the constitutionality of that effort.
Mark, I'll take the first half. I'll give you the second half of that question. So, Ruth, this is Amy Haxton-Miller from Whole Women's Health. All of our clinics are open. All of our clinics are complying with the law and are providing abortion care services, as are all of the independent provider clinics, which means non-affiliated with Planned Parenthood in the state of Texas that I know of. And so what's the tragedy is that we can only provide abortion for about 10% of the people that we could provide abortion for yesterday. But folks are doing our best to be able to provide as many people with abortion care services under this new SB8 law as possible. And I will punt to our lead attorney, Mark, to talk a little bit about the sort of, rigorous legal and threats and surveillance that we're operating under and some of the counsel that we've received about the best way to do that.
Sure, Amy, and thanks for the question, Ruth. It's if you if you think about it, the way that this law is structured, it's not simply that, oh, you can just, you know, raise your constitutional challenges and you're going to win every case, right? The law is structured in such a way that makes it as difficult as possible to defend, partly because the law purports to actually override the Supreme Court's precedents, undue burden defense. It has some artificial constraints on that defense. So, and it actually makes you try to prove it as a defense rather than, you know, a law being unconstitutional. And then the other thing is, you know, if you provide one abortion, there could be multiple lawsuits over one abortion, right, in courts across the state. The law allows any individual citizen who lives in Texas to bring a suit in their own county, and the courts are blocked from actually transferring that case to a more appropriate venue. So you could have hundreds, thousands of cases filed across the state over just, you know, over the same abortion or a handful of abortions. So it creates a situation where even if the defendants in those cases were to win every single case, and just to be clear, we think, you know, every single case that would be filed is clearly unconstitutional under Supreme Court precedent for 50 years. Even if the defendants were to win every single case, the burden of having to defend themselves, of having attorneys, of spending their time, having to go around in rural courts all over Texas, 258 counties, defending themselves, that alone threatens to stop the provision of abortion access across the state. So, you know, the law in the Supreme Court is extremely clear, and it has been clear for over 100 years, that you do not have to violate the law in advance, wait to get sued or wait for the law to be enforced against you, and then raise your constitutional arguments in that context. You can sue in advance in order to get the law blocked, and that's exactly what we've done here. And, you know, we're just waiting for the decision, you know, and in fact, the district court completely agreed with us, you know, that the arguments that were raised in the district court were essentially that, you know, that you can't sue in advance. You have to wait. You have to violate the law and then wait and get sued. We litigated all those issues in the district court, and the district court completely agreed with all of it, with us on those arguments. So we're poised to get an injunction. We need an injunction now.
Ruth, this is Amy again. I'll just add some context, because I think a lot of folks who don't work directly in abortion services as supporters or direct providers may not sort of know some of these details. So, for example, if one of our physicians decides to provide abortions even in compliance with SB 8, that doesn't prevent them from having a lawsuit brought against them and being accused of noncompliance. And if you are a physician, every time you apply for a license to practice medicine in any state, every time you apply for hospital admitting privileges, every time you apply for a DAA license in order to provide prescriptions for people, the same question comes up on all of these applications that asks people, have you ever had a lawsuit brought against you? And even if these frivolous lawsuits are dismissed, our physicians will have to report them for the rest of their careers. And these frivolous lawsuits will be used to call their credibility into question, will be used to deny them hospital privileges, et cetera. So this is the context in which providers and staff are making these kinds of decisions. This law is designed not only to threaten and intimidate in the abstract, but will have real and lasting effects on our physicians for years to come.
We'll take our next question from Belen Hollers with the Dallas Morning News.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my question. I'm just curious, and this is for Mark, and I'm sure other people can answer this as well. What is the legal risk for people going outside of the state and those who help going outside of the state, given that they're, you know, the aiding and abetting, what does that look like?
Sure. So this also ties back to to Michelle Goldberg's question earlier, which I do want to just add something to that, which is that the question about self-managed abortions, which is I do want to make clear that SBA does say that the patient herself would not be sued, cannot be sued under the law. You know, our best read of this law, I think the best way to read the law is that it only applies to abortions within Texas. And so if we're talking about an abortion outside of Texas, it wouldn't be prohibited, and therefore aiding and abetting an abortion outside of, you know, you're not aiding and abetting because you're just helping someone access an abortion that is legal outside of Texas. Again, however, because this law can be enforced, you know, because anybody can file these lawsuits to try to enforce this law, whether that person agrees with us, you know, if that person disagrees with us, that doesn't necessarily stop them from filing that lawsuit and then forcing people into courts across the state to have to go defend themselves. So that's part of the danger here.
And this is Anna Rupani from FTC, just chiming in to echo what Mark said, but also to reiterate that orgs that do help Texans travel are willing to help Texans travel out of state because our interpretation of the law is the same.
We'll take our next question from Chloe Atkins with NBC News.
Hey guys, so this is for Mark with CRR. And I have two questions. So what does the court's inaction say about the current state of reproductive rights in America right now?
It means that at least for now, the state of Texas has been able to, has become the first state since Roe v. Wade to enact and actually have a 6-week ban that goes into effect. You know, what the longer term consequences, I think we're just gonna have to wait and see what the Supreme Court does. We haven't seen their ruling yet. So the longer term consequences remain to be seen. However, there is a case right now pending in the Supreme Court that's Mississippi's 15-week ban. That's also a case brought by the Center for Reproductive Rights. And that is a direct challenge to Roe. Obviously, all of those issues are at stake in that case.
We'll take our next question from Orion Rumler with the 19th News.
Hi, thanks y'all so much. I believe Mark, Anna, Adriana may have the most to say for this. Could a patient or anyone just asking questions about an abortion potentially be prosecuted instead of actively seeking one? Are there any penalties for falsely suing others? What are the chances this could be reversed in the foreseeable future? Thank you so much.
I just want to make clear that the law does not allow lawsuits against patients. It's a law that allows lawsuits against providers and against those who support patients, you know, quote unquote, aid and abet, but it's not against patients themselves. So I think that's the answer to your first question. And I'm sorry, I forgot the rest of your questions.
I'm sorry, he has already left the queue at this time. We will take our last question from Alice Olstein with Politico.
Hi. The previous reporter's question was one I also had, which is if there are any repercussions for people filing a lawsuit against a provider or a supporter that does not pan out. So filing false claims or frivolous or anything like that. Is there any deterrent for that? And I also wanted to ask if you, if any of the groups that work more nationally are aware of other states pursuing a similar law. Thank you.
Yes, thanks for the reminder on that. So the way the law is structured, again, this is yet another perversity in this law, which is that if someone sues an abortion provider or someone who has supported an abortion patient and doesn't win, there's no consequence built into that law that, that the abortion provider or patient supporter who gets sued can't recover their attorney's fees or costs of having to defend themselves. But if someone sues under this law and wins, then not only is there a mandatory penalty of at least $10,000, which $10,000 is the floor, not the ceiling, and injunctive relief preventing abortions, you know, preventing prohibited abortions in the future, but also the cost of the attorney's fees. So the way that the Texas legislature structured this law was to entice as many lawsuits as possible, place this $10,000 bounty and make it essentially risk-free because if they win, they get their attorney's fees paid. If they lose, they don't have to pay the other side's attorney's fees. And then, I'm sorry, what was the other question?
Alice, your line is live. Please ask your follow-up question.
Yes, I asked whether you're aware of other states pursuing copycat laws or expect that to happen.
Yes. So I am sure that other states will, you know, if Texas is successful here, that other states will look into following suit. You know, that certainly happens with abortion statutes. But I do want to clarify that, you know, regardless of an individual's view on abortion or, you know, regardless of what someone thinks about this issue, everybody should be very concerned if Texas can do this, because if a state can simply outsource its enforcement authority to private citizens and allow private citizens, deputize them to sue people for simply exercising a fundamental right that's recognized by the Constitution in the Bill of Rights, then that allows any state to attack any individual right that's recognized and a fundamental right in the Bill of Rights. And you can spin out hypothetical after hypothetical about any individual right that a state could undermine. So that's why I think everyone from all sides of this perspective ought to be extremely concerned and hope that the Texas legislature's cynical framing and structure of this law fails.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. Unfortunately, we have to end the call here. I know that the queue is relatively long, so feel free to reach out to any of the press contacts on the advisory that you receive, and we will try to get back to you. But it's a really busy day for everybody, and I want to thank them again for making time, and thank you all for joining. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.